Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off.
Hey, welcome back to the Dropship Podcast. John here with you for a solo intro, but not a solo show. In fact, in this episode of the Dropship Podcast, we are joined by a whole bunch of Dropship Breakthrough students, as well as John and Ben. So today I'm going to be leading you into a call that we did, a Zoom call recording, which you can watch, listen to. You can also watch the video if you're on Spotify or YouTube, of a fortnightly call we do with our members inside our elite membership inside of Dropship Breakthrough. So every fortnight we jump on with a group of members, myself and Ben, and we talk about all sorts of different stuff, anything from marketing strategies, how to grow your business, questions from our members, all sorts of different stuff, different theme every fortnight. And that fits in amongst all of the other group coaching calls that we do, which happen multiple calls a week. On this particular call, we talked about good niche, bad niche as a theme, which is one that we do talk about on this podcast quite a bit. You will have heard previous episodes. If you're new, you can go back and listen to them, where we've picked apart a particular niche and talked about whether we think it's great or not for high ticket dropshipping. In this call, we talked about a whole bunch of different niches. We took questions from members on the call live, and so you're going to get to listen to this. We normally do not release these sort of calls outside of our membership, but today you can have a listen to one. And of course, if you do enjoy it and you're like, oh man, I'd love to be a part of that, then all you have to do is join Dropship Breakthrough. You can access our elite membership in the process of joining. Just go to dropshipbreakthrough.com/join. You can get in today. But for now, let's dive into the call.
Well, welcome to the call. Good niche, bad niche, live, if you will. I think this will be fun. Just to get, like, it's the feedback we get on those episodes tends to be really the only feedback we get. Podcasts are lonely. You get no feedback really, other than the occasional, hey, good job, I really like that one. But yet you can see your listens continue to go up and go up. And so, but when we do these episodes, we tend to have someone reach out, sometimes not in the best way. Like we did the sensory toys one. We specifically said this is not drop shipping. And yet we had a lot of people send us emails that were like, oh, I've been waiting for this dropshipping niche. I'm the person. I can do this. And we're like, darn it. That's not what we're trying to do here. And so, but we do get a lot of feedback of people who seem to like these episodes. So, John, I think the ideas that we have in Slack are Victor saying, sorry, I lost my screen now. Hold on. Getting back here. Too many windows. Victor saying welding equipment. It had good potential for initial big ticket B2B sales, followed by lots of consumables. However, the competition from national companies like Zorro and absence of map on many brands was daunting. Lindsay's is in the thread of announcements. I'll let you read that one, John. That one should be fun for us to tear apart. And it looks like we got EV chargers. Solar in general, maybe a better store idea. Golf gadgets in the chat as well. If anyone else here has an idea they want John and I to riff on, we will. John, did you like any of those as far as like something you want to start with?
The reason I suggested welding equipment, because it's an example, it's sort of adjacent to some of the niches I'm in now, where just going up against these national distributors and competing in an area where there isn't map. And there's a lot of like heavy discounting on price as well as advantages on shipping rates and things like that. So that was the reason I suggested that as a potential good niche, bad niche.
I appreciate the clarity there. Some of that stuff you just don't find out until you're even in it, right? Like it's hard to figure out exactly the dirty details until you're in an industry, right? Like everyone on this call is in something different for the most part. And everybody on this call would tell you, you don't want to be in this industry for X, Y, and Z reason. And so, you know, sometimes you just don't find that until the end. Oh, another good one. You don't find it until you're in there. Gold mining machinery. I'm interested in that one as well. John, where do you want? I'm letting John pick. Where do you want to go today? And I forgot to bring the game sheet.
Oh, well, let's start with the old. Let's start at the top of the list and work our way down. That's always the way I do it. Welding equipment. All
right. Welding equipment. I'm going to share my screen, I guess, and we'll surf around. Victor, you might have to hop in here and give us some, like, if I just type in welding equipment, that's where I usually start. And so let's start there.
The place to start.
I've got a good giant black bar on my screen, chat on my window. Hold on a second here. I'm working with a smaller screen here in Florida. This is hard.
But I mean, my first thought with this, in response to this, is that anytime somebody says a niche idea to me that is a product type, I immediately say you're thinking about it wrong. Like, welding equipment is not the niche. The customer's the niche, right? So, like, who's using the welding equipment? That's my first thought, right? Like, if you just say I'm going to go do all welding equipment, it kind of, in a way, it closes you off to possibility. So are you selling welding equipment to somebody who's welding underwater, who's a professional commercial diver? Are you selling welding equipment to some Joe Bag of Donuts who just welds his own car stuff in his shed at home? Like, who are you selling welding equipment to? Like, people who work on high rises? These are all different customer avatars, right? And so sometimes if you're struggling with thinking about, oh, this market doesn't look good for this reason, that reason, and another, or I'm concerned about competing with big distributors who maybe look like they serve all of those people, I would just pick the customer and then sell what they need to them, because it's not just going to be welding equipment. So, like, if I said, really, my ideal customer here is the dude in his shed who's, you know, maybe he's, you know, he fixes up old cars. That's his jam. And part of that is he's going to be doing some fabrication, you know, doing a bit of welding, knows how to weld, all that sort of stuff. So he might need a lower end welding setup, you know, not one of the massive super professional ones, but he's also going to buy a whole bunch of other shit to pursue that. And I'd be selling him all of that stuff as well. It doesn't make sense to sell anyone just welding equipment. Similarly, if I was going after companies that are like commercial diving companies and they do underwater welding in all sorts of places, there's a whole bunch of other high ticket products that I could sell them as well as the welding equipment that they're going to utilize to do that sort of stuff. So that's usually like when people, when we do our market verification and that sort of thing, which I tend to do all of those in the course, and people say product type is my niche, I say, no, it's not. Think about this and change it, because like I would not start a store today if I was starting again that just sold a type or category of product and that's the niche. I wouldn't do that at all. Because if you go down to that level, like if you say I'm the site for people who, yeah, they use welding equipment, they use some other things, but this is what they're using it for. I'm the site for those people. I don't give a shit about national distributors at that point, because they're not going to compete with you at that level. You're going to do a better job of serving that person than some big national conglomerate, like that. Yeah, maybe they've got cheap prices or something, but their experience is not great. They don't serve the customer. Like, Big companies never serve anybody well. The bigger a company gets, the less well it does at that. They just broader, so they make money that way, or they're bigger, right? So I don't know. To me, that's not an issue. I mean, things around map pricing and all that sort of thing, yeah, maybe there's some concerns there. I would say a lot of the time that's not an issue. Sometimes it is. But once again, when you're like, my niche is going to be serving this person and there's a range of products, doesn't really matter if one product category is not great, because you're going to be selling a range of different product categories. You're going to be combining products together. Hey, get a welder and get this as well. Here's a bundle, you know, and that sort of thing. And so it becomes less of an issue when you can still make use of a product that doesn't have great pricing, or maybe you're not the lowest price if you're selling it with something else, right? It really is less of a problem. And so, I mean, that's my immediate thought about this is that, you know, maybe there's some good brands in there, maybe there's some shit brands in there from various perspectives. But I just wouldn't do welding. I wouldn't be like the welding equipment store in the first place. That's not how I would look at that one.
If you've been getting tons of value from the podcast and you want to learn more about high ticket dropshipping and interact with a fantastic community of high ticket dropshippers, we've got a free Facebook group that you can join right now today. So if you head over to Facebook and search for Dropship Breakthrough, you'll see a Facebook come up that has on the end of it, High Ticket Dropshipping Mastery for New Entrepreneurs. Hit the join button, you'll get into the group. We do group only trainings in there, and there's thousands of other people who are going through the high ticket dropshipping journey that you can look for support from, ask questions, and find out if high ticket dropshipping is for you.
So for me, I might start with a product, but eventually I think you're going to lead to that, Heyman, to John's point. And like, I just like to be curious. I think too often people come look at products or say they can't find something and they're just not curious enough. Like, how far down this rabbit hole can I go? Like John mentioned underwater. I probably would have found that as a keyword. I would have jumped into this, which would have moved me into underwater hydraulics, which I don't even know what this is. By all means, I am a dumb when it comes to most things in life. But I don't know what any of this stuff is, right? And like, that's where I would start going down the rabbit hole. So where did you go down the rabbit hole, Victor? Where did you, because it can't just be like welding equipment. I'm sure you started with a product, but then where do we go from there?
Yeah, you know, the customer is a weldor, W-E-L-D-O-R. The equipment's W-E-L-D-E-R, but a person who's like a professional welder is a weldor. And that's kind of the avatar that I had in mind when I was pursuing this. And basically, you know, I didn't go super deep into this. I just thought it would be a good topic for your call today. You know,
hopefully nobody takes offense to whoever generated the idea. If it feels like we're pointing the finger at you to shit on you, we are not. John and I shit on everyone equally, and this is an equal opportunity shit on you zone. So please don't take offense on whatever it is. We're just trying to understand. This helps us work through, right? If I'm looking through here, I'm trying to work through to a person too and try to understand what other equipment makes sense. So like the first two people that I clicked on here in the organic results are selling a bunch of other stuff. Potentially to mostly the water side of things, like you said, right? Versus like a construction side of welding thing versus, you know, someone who's doing welding at home, if that makes sense. What are you seeing out of the gates, John? If you want me to go somewhere, just tell me, man. First thing that jumped out to me is like, these prices look fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I think prices are good. Shipping's good. I don't have any problem with it. Like I said, I just wouldn't sell just welding equipment. Out of the gates, I just wouldn't. I don't see that there's any need to these days. Like, I mean, that's the DSL way. Fuck that. Like, I just don't really dive this deep into it. Like, I prefer to find it. Like, once again, the weldor, like, I get that idea. But once again, that's a really broad range of people. Like, I mean, I've been in like these sort of like spaces and like in a past life when I used to work on tools and stuff like that when I was a young fella, like that person could still be doing any number of fucking different things. And I just don't think like people underestimate the size of markets, particularly in the US. Like, you just don't need to serve everybody who's qualified to weld. Like, it's just, that's a massive, massive, massive fucking market. Like, it's gigantosaurus market, right? Like, you don't even need to be in that bigger market to make 9 figures, let alone 7 or 8 figures, right? So I would just come at it completely different. I'd sell welding stuff. I'd sell laser cutters. I'd sell all sorts of shit. Anybody who, like, you know, I mean, so I just wouldn't worry about individual product types. There's going to be stuff in there that works. Like, I just think sometimes it's too easy to overthink this stuff. Like, I have not seen a single, maybe one or two niches in my entire time where across the board,
margins were terrible. And across the board, it just didn't work. There's always, yeah, some brands, some things that don't work, but there's always some that do. There's always some that do. And so, you know, I don't dive super deep. I just don't think you need to. I think if you wanted to make this work, you would make it work. That's the reality. But I you know, past that, I'd be more interested in the customer than the individual products at this point with this sort of idea. I just, yeah.
Yeah, maybe I gave up on it too quickly, but, you know, when I'm thinking of someone who holds himself out as a professional welder, very often that's somebody who has a flatbed truck with, you know, a 30 horsepower engine driven welder on the back. Those things go for $25,000 or more. And yeah, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that that kind of avatar would need. And, you know, they usually have multiple types of equipment.
I genuinely don't even know what half that stuff is. I feel like I would not be helpful in even like getting curious on this, like getting to a person, like, you know, John's mentioning underwater. That's probably where I would start. And trying to think, talk me through that, Victor, like who's the guy who's got whatever that thing is you just sat on the back of their truck. What jobs do they do? Who are they working for? What problems are they solving?
Yeah, they'll do construction, right? They're sort of journeymen. They'll go on a construction site and weld the I-beams. Or they'll go into, you know, an industrial site and repair equipment with it. You know, there's a whole bunch of different things. You know, I've limited experience. I'm a mechanical engineer, so I studied a lot of this stuff. But then I decided later on, I go to take like a trade school class in welding. And that's where I sort of got hands on, got interested in it. But I only know enough to be dangerous.
Where do you want me to go, John? How would you get to the person? Like, I think the majority of people start with a product, good or bad, and they probably shouldn't, right? We should start with the human we're serving. But sometimes I like to go from a product to a human. How would you get to a human from this wide array of products? Because you're going to end up on these giant sites. This is a ridiculous site. Like, selling all this stuff is ridiculous. How would you get down to the human? How would you start?
If you didn't know anything about it, I'd struggle to think how you came up with welding machines in the first place. Obviously, Victor, as he explained, has some, you know, previous life experience with these sort of products, either from a practical or a studying perspective. And so you're going to have some insight into it that way. But like, if I thought, oh, welding machines, welders, that sounds interesting, just because I thought of it for some reason. I know a guy that used it maybe, but I didn't really know anything about it. I'd just start going and looking around on some of the sites that sell them, like just start Googling. I mean, there's going to be a billion pieces of content out there where people are using a welder to do something, right? Like whether it's on other e-commerce stores and their content, whether it's on blogs, whether it's on affiliate sites, whether it's on YouTube, like just go and look. Like I'd Google things like who uses welders? What do people do with welders? Like if I really didn't know, I mean, I also just know what people do with these things. But I would get in there and I would just Google. Like, I agree. I mean, this is probably the bit that I would be more curious about in a sense. If I find a good product that I think, oh yeah, that price is good. You know, like this one you've got on the screen at the moment, $8,000, $8,500. If I somehow came across that product and I'm like, I don't know what this does or who uses it. Well, I'm just going to go and start. Google is your friend, man. You know, I mean, I'm sure ChatGPT can give you the answer to that, some of these questions as well, or Gemini Ultra, or whatever you like to play with in the AI space. Throw some questions at that. It's going to tell you some stuff. You know, just ask some questions. And I agree, like you can be curious about it. And if you ask some questions about, you know, what professions use welders or, you know, what are welders used for and stuff? You're going to start uncovering some of those. Well, people use them in construction for high rises. People use them underwater to, you know, for all sorts of reasons. You know, guys use them for this, you know, in their shed at home. And you're going to uncover all of those sort of customer avatars. And From that point, you just need to, I guess, kind of use your common sense to separate them. I mean, obviously, somebody who is an underwater welder is not the same customer as somebody who, you know, welds car things for cars in their shed at home, who has welding experience, but maybe they're not a professional welder. I mean, no one of those markets is any better than the other. You know, whether somebody is a, like, I mean, the price points for some of these, oh, look, there we go. Nice one, Benny. You know, artists and sculptors, there you go. I didn't even think about that, but now that you mention it, yeah, totally. I've seen artists up here near where I live who do these massive sculptures made out of metal and put them near the beach and stuff like that. Totally, you know. And I can tell you there's probably other higher ticket products that they use to put that metal work together as well, right, that you could sell them. I mean, that's a super niche. That's a niche if you were going to focus on those people. But look at some of these groups: automotive restorers, farmers and ranchers, DIY home improvement enthusiasts, marine workers and boat owners. Like, you don't want to sell to all of these people at once, right? You want to pick one of these, any one of these: automotive restorers, farmers and ranchers, marine workers and boat owners. You know, any one of those is a massive niche in and of itself. And it's not just going to be welders. You sell them the welding equipment, but like sell them a bunch of other stuff. Like, it's massive, massive.
I'm trying to get to a different tool I like to use here in a different window. I'll see if I can get there. So I took a guess on MIG. Maybe you can tell me this is a different word. Let me get back to the screen I'm actually sharing here. Oh my God. This one window stuff sucks. I don't know how anyone does this one window stuff.
There's three main types of welding. There's MIG, which is the most common and kind of easiest to do. There's TIG, which takes more skill. It's for welding like stainless steel and aluminum and stuff. And then there's stick welding, which is usually what you think of when you think of a welder with a, you know, welding on an I-beam or something.
So I like to come, this is a paid tool. You can do this in other tools, not as easy, but I threw in MIG welder as the term. In the United States, all terms include the include the word for, and then sort by volume. And you can kind of start seeing use cases, which will then also bring you to a user. So if we're gonna sell all welder, if you just started selling all those welding things, you have no idea which avatar that we saw on the other screen was coming to your site. And that would make it very difficult for you to do keyword research. That would make it very difficult for you to write product descriptions. That would make it very difficult for you to write ads. And so, like, to John's point, can we narrow it down on one person and then, like, really bring this home to some of these terms? And sometimes these four terms can help us get there. Again, I just guessed on MIG welder. I have no idea whether cake or stick, I think is what you said, would bring like more terms like this. But this is how I don't know. And then I just like to screw around, right? I would be in an incognito window and I would type in MIG welder space four, and then space, and just see what Google shows me for results. And again, I think John and I are on the same page of like, let's get to a human, but hopefully we can find different unique ways to get to that human, if that makes sense.
Mm. Linda asked a follow-on question there. She's saying, Johnny, are you saying we should be only selling to one customer avatar? Not necessarily, no. But in this instance, where I think the question started with some of the possible issues with this niche, is that it looks very competitive with like big distributors and tight, maybe tight margins and funny pricing and that sort of thing. In that circumstance, one of the ways that you can get around those is by focusing on one customer avatar, if it's a big enough market. You know, it's not always. And sometimes you don't need to do that. You might have two or three, and Ben's gone through his exercise where he uses the example of the golf site that he was a part of and the different avatars that they identified there. I think there's something like seven or something like that. Very, you know, I think in some cases finally separated, but nevertheless, definitely makes sense when he talks through that, if you haven't heard that. But yes, sometimes that is the case, that you should focus on one customer avatar, because one customer avatar is all you need, right? And if no one else is directly serving that customer avatar, then it gives you a competitive advantage. But sometimes it's fine to have a number of them on your site. You know, if you weren't bothered about things like competition or, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, you know, it might also be, I guess, a bit of nuance there around, you know, the size of the site that it would mean. Like, you know, once again, if I was looking at a market and there was a whole bunch of different avatars, like Ben showed on the screen before, and serving all of them is just going to make your site a massive beast of like thousands of products. Like, fuck that. I'm not interested in that. I'd niche down because once again, that's just such a nightmare. I know some people in a membership have sites like that for sure. I would not be interested in that one a little bit. That sounds terrible to me. And so I would prefer to focus on a narrower focus and just do that really well. But the narrow focus is never one type of product, right? Because that doesn't narrow you down to an avatar usually, right? So anyway, yeah.
Sorry if you see me smiling over here, Matt. Matt sent me a really juicy industry that I can't wait to dive into. But first up, we'll go in order here. Oh, man. Matt, that has me like geeking out just by looking at it, man. All right. Next up is it's in the announcements channel in the threads. I won't share the view of that so you don't see all my all the other stuff going on in my Slack. But Lindsay says, and again, Lindsay, we're not pointing fingers here. I'm just using you as an example. So sorry if we get mean.
That's okay.
I'm in the build phase and decided on a niche, so hopefully it doesn't get ripped apart, but I'm willing to share. My niche is in off-grid kitchen and bath supplies. Top item I am focused on is composting toilets. Here's a breakdown of the products I am thinking. And I actually read this wrong, so I'm not going to go where I thought I was going to go on this. And you have bathroom and bowl, but it's not like stepping out. So she's talking about composting toilets, portable showers, sinks, hot water heaters, kitchen, water filtration, cooking stove, off-grid refrigeration, and solar power. I'm going to actually let John say whatever he wants to say here because I've got a lot of experience in this industry and I've certainly got my own thoughts. But John, what's your first takeaway when you read that? Is John going to rant on this one? I think is what I'm asking. Is John going to go crazy on the segmentation she started with?
And John, no, before you start that, I do want to say, you know, I attended the Avatar session, you know, so like I have built out like an Avatar list of customers that, you know, I think fit those products. So maybe I am missing the part that I need to pick one of those avatars to focus on, but I'll let you go.
Maybe you do. I wouldn't actually think, I mean, I have some I set a business up in this space years ago for somebody else. So I did look into it quite a bit. It might've changed since then, I'm sure. Like the person who wants to buy this stuff and they're genuinely interested in living off grid, I don't think that's that broad a range of avatars, to be honest. You know, there's definitely a few that I could think of. And they're probably not really that different though. I mean, they're different in some ways, but you know, this would be one where I mean, you could split a couple off, I suppose, but I don't know. I don't mind. I probably wouldn't limit myself to kitchen and bath supplies. Like, I mean, if you were going to say like, let's say one of your customer avatars is the person who wants to live off grid in a tiny home, for example, which is going to be probably Ben's example or what he's going to talk about here. So I'll steal your thunder a little bit. Like I would just sell any products that somebody would want to buy to that makes sense, like from a high ticket drop shipping perspective, to, you know, do their tiny home thing. Right. I mean, I'm not really worried about whether it's kitchen and bath, but like, you know, whereas if I was going to go for somebody who like, I think, you know, a segment of that market could be people who live in an RV off and they're off grid and that sort of thing. I think that's actually a different niche. I would be doing an RV and caravan niche, not like thinking about it in the off grid sense. You know, there's some individual product categories in here that I don't like, and are difficult. But as I said before, when you're serving a customer, if you have one or two product categories that aren't ideal, as long as they're not too many of them, it doesn't matter so much to me. Like, you know, like if I picked one out of that list that I would say is definitely difficult and most people don't do it well, some people do, and I think even some of those people are on this call, is going to be the solar power. Like That's a tough market, right? Solar power at the moment in a lot of ways. Everybody goes and like, there's some good stuff. There's some not some good stuff in there. There's some things that are very, very competitive. There's a lot of brands that sell their own products direct to customer. And so if you came to me and said, oh, I want to start a niche in the solar power space, I would probably say, no, don't do that right now. Unless you're, once again, you've got a really specific use case for the solar. But in this case, it's not such an issue for me, right? If some of those other product categories are good, and I haven't looked into every single one of them, so I'm not going to say whether they are or not, but if they were good and I was just going to sell solar products alongside those, and in some cases, I'm going to have a customer who comes to me to buy a composting toilet and they're like, oh yeah, and at a later point, I can sell them some solar products. That's cool. Like, I don't care that the solar products are a little bit shit, right? Because I've got, you know, 10 other things that my customer avatar is going to be interested in buying. And once I have them as a customer on one thing, like, they are now immediately taken out of the competition pool for the solar products, right? Because if I start going to them, now they're my customer, the chance they're going to buy from me again is exponentially higher. And so they're not, if they need solar products and they know I sell them, they're not necessarily entering the market in the normal way for those products. If I'm doing my job of staying in touch with them post-purchase, for example, right? So I'm not really that worried when you have a, this is why I say I don't really worry too much about, you know, I would still do the research on these different product categories. If they all look like super competitive, I'd be like, no, I'm not going to do that, right? But if there's one or two in there that doesn't look great for some reason, but I can see it being part of a bigger puzzle, then I wouldn't worry about that. So, I mean, on the face of it, without looking at any numbers or anything like that, I mean, I would say, you know, this is possibly something you can make work. Sure. Ben, you have more direct experience with this one.
Yeah. Look, I think there's some people on the call who have experience in some of these industries, and I've said this shit to their face, so I'll make sure I say it live on a call too. I try to think through who I'm serving, just like John says, and really put yourself in the shoes of who's buying these things. So I have experience in the tiny house market. I was part of probably one of the bigger sites that you've seen out there for a while. The people who are building tiny houses and want to live frugally are not fucking fun to deal with. Like, they're not out here spending freely. And so, like, you've heard me say this before, and I don't care how it comes across, really, it's the truth. Affluent white males are the best audience to sell to. Now, tell me if you know any affluent white males who are living in a tiny house, because they're not, right? Like, they're that's not the type of person who's doing that. So you have this avatar of, like, Tiny House Tom or Tiny House Tina, right? And they're frugal. And the idea that you're going to sell them more products, they might need them, but, like, they're looking for the best deal. They're looking for an option that fits their budget. Then you have, like, God, what do we call them? It was on that avatar call. Bill said he had someone like that. MAGA Matt, is that what you went with, Bill? There's MAGA Matt, who's, like, you know, convinced the end of the world is coming, and they need this, like, you know, shelter, and they need all these backup systems in case World War III happens or an EMP happens or whatever. The latest one is the grid. There's going to be, like, an EMP that shuts down the grid, and then they'll insert Michelle Obama as the Democratic candidate, something like that. They're good ones out there, man.
You guys are fucking insane. Do you know that?
Don't, we can't lump us all together here. Come on, man. All right. So anyway, there's MAGA Matt, right? And going to tell you, not my favorite avatar to deal with. There is RV Raphael. Is that what, I don't know. We're making these up as we go along. Again, maybe fits that category. They were certainly more pleasant to deal with than Tiny Home Tina, for sure. Still not super, like, friendly to deal with. And then, like, I've got experience with some of these products directly. I would say I would agree with John. Solar is getting pretty crowded at this point. Certainly you can find some inroads, like he had mentioned there. Composting toilets is very top heavy. There's one brand that sells way more than everybody else. There's actually, like, two brands that do. One you can't have, and one's very difficult to get. And again, that's just from personal experience. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm just not a fan of, like, certain avatars. And this is one of those industries where it's like, I'm not an off-grid seeker. I'm not someone who wants to live. There's so many different ways you could do this, right? There's, like, the Toyota Tundra people who want to, like, be out in the wilderness and do this sort of off-grid thing. That's not me. I tend to lean towards more what I know. Again, you saw it with the welding stuff. Like, that looked good. A lot of the numbers look good. I have no interest in that. Whereas, like, the next one that Matt's going to bring up here, I've never done it before, but it intrigues me anyway. And so like, that could be fun. I don't know. That's kind of where I lean to on this. I don't know how that makes anyone feel. Also don't know if this is making me big when I speak, by the way. All I see is John's big face on my screen. So this is recording, right?
I think the one bit I'd say about what Ben just said, and not that I disagree, is unless you're that person. So I think like I'm right. Like the MAGA Matt or whoever that was, personally, I wouldn't want to ever talk to that person, really. And if that's you and you're on this call, I'm sorry, we're never going to be friends. But I wouldn't want to talk to that person every day of the week. That would just drive me fucking insane, right? And that would be an out for me on that niche. But if I was that person, then I should definitely go and do that niche, because I'm going to love talking to customers and doing content and doing whatever about that stuff. And I'm probably going to do it really well. So I would say that is certainly probably an exception. I differ from Ben a bit. Like affluent white males, sure, great to sell to. I'm not quite as restrictive as that because I've sold to other groups of people and it worked out just fine. I like to sell to affluent white females personally, but that's just me. And so if you're that person and you're like, and this is me, and that's why I've come up with this idea, then that's usually a, you know, yes, the other criteria need to check out. The prices need to be good, not too much competition, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. The other criteria we look at. But I mean, that's usually something, you know, that's usually a good indication. You're like, yeah, I share something with that customer. Then that's usually a good indication you should go and do that thing.
Look, I want to make sure I clear it up. I'm not restrictive to only affluent white male. I will just say when I've been in industries where that's the case, it just feels a little easier. That's all I'm saying. And I think affluent might just be the word there. You know, everybody needs things. Some people lay in bed and buy them at night, right? And like, can you be the person selling products where people are just laying in bed buying these things at on their phone? That makes it a lot more fun. And I'm not saying that's the only thing you should do. Please don't feel like I'm excluding everything else besides that. It's just, it's worked well for me. I'm only using my own experience here. And obviously John has sold in different markets than I have. And we both coached or consulted or however you want to word that, you know, hundreds of people at this point. And so we've seen everything work under the sun, including this entire industry, Lindsay, like literally. And I've been part of it. And so like, I know it works. It's just, not for me personally.
Yeah. Thanks guys.
Yeah. I hope you got some value out of that. All right. I'm going to jump around real quick. I do want to jump back to a couple of these, but Matt sent me one and I can't take my eyes off it, John. So we're going to go right to this one. It is gold mining machinery. Have you ever seen this come across your desk?
No. Well, I mean, I'm aware of it personally, but I don't know of anybody. I do know somebody who was doing mining equipment once. This was a long time ago. So maybe I have not seen it in a long time, and you know, not a surprise. I mean, there are so many of these kind of, probably industrial kind of feeling things out there, nobody thinks of, right? There's tons of them. This is why I always say there are so many niches out there that are still wide fucking open. This is probably one of them. Like, I don't know why nobody has come to me and said, I'm going to just do an engineering store. You know how many crazy expensive products engineers use? Like, there's tons of them. Nobody's doing it. You know, anyway. But yeah, gold mining. Sounds like fun.
I feel like this is one of them. What turned me out, sorry, Matt, I'm just going to, Matt sent me this one. And at first, all I saw was like the homepage, which by the way, just like, you know, looks like it's from 19... whatever. I don't even know how to get to the homepage now. Like that goes to their equipment page. That's interesting. All right. So it started here and I'm just like, what are you doing, Matt? Like, thanks for sending me this. And then I was like, and then I just, you know, I went to Rock Crushers and I was like, what? Like $2,000, $8,000. Just like, this blew my mind right away. And I was just like, holy shit, why is no one doing this? And to my point of like being interested, I'm that guy. I don't watch TV anymore at all. But like back in the day, I would watch those gold mining shows that are on Discovery or whatever. And I'm sure there's other people who watch those as well. And like, the thought of like, that's probably why I play craps and like enjoy gambling. Like this feels like gambling to me. And so I don't know, man. Initial thoughts here, John, when you're seeing machines like this that are 5 foot by 7 or 5 inch by 7 inch, $30,000.
Yep. I mean,
you've done a lot of these verifications. This has never come across your desk?
No. And the only question I would have is for sometimes in these sort of spaces, the only question, I mean, this is an automatic yes for me. The only question I would have is, are there enough suppliers of some of these products? Mm. Now, I would assume in the US there probably is. In some other countries, there might not be. In like smaller population countries, for a niche like this, there might not be. And so you might go a little bit broader potentially. But I mean, that would be my big question. Can I find enough suppliers to reach out to and that sort of thing for some of these really specialty products? But I mean, even if you could only find a few for each category, and you know, there's a range of different categories of products on here. You know, I think a dirt pirate. Yes.
That was my nickname in high school. That's weird.
Yeah, I mean, this one would be a yes for me. Like, if somebody sent this to me, I would just be like, yes, do it. Assuming you can find the suppliers. Yeah. Straight up. Easy.
Matt, can you like hop on and like tell, how did you stumble into this one?
Let's see. Metal detectors. Kind of. I thought of that first, and then I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Let me find some gold really quick. And then this all these different like old mining sites popped up. And then I remembered back to what your buddy Zach was, his recent acquisition for one of these sites kind of reminded me of that. I was like, oh, that looks good. Old businesses with new tech and new skill set always sounds good to me.
Yeah, with John, like I'm not seeing a lot of big names in here as far as like a variety. Can you find this stuff? That would be my concern too. But like, man, these look this looks fantastic. At least like to go explore. And then yeah, like the who here, right? Is this is clearly somebody who's a little bit beyond, you know, going to their local stream with a sluice, you know, with a whatever those things are called, or the shaker thing. This is pretty intensive stuff, and so what are they searching? How are you getting in front of them? That's a better question. And then, you know, are you going outside of gold here? They are demonstrating that they're doing other equipment. All of these links link to this page, by the way, which is weird. Anytime you find, you know, a site like this, and then all the numbers look good, and these guys are crushing, that's a really good sign. Anytime there's like a 1990s GeoCities type site crushing, which Matt, GeoCities was this website builder before Wix and things came along. Probably came out before you were born, honestly. If you see sites like that, sorry, I just love ripping on you. You're so young. You're going to win. Like, you're not going to win, but you have an opportunity to win when you're competing against the likes of this stuff. This is crazy. I would imagine this is a, Gold Gary. I'm not sure what you would call him. That guy probably wants to tell you stories when he's on the phone. That's my guess. So be prepared to be on conversations here, or hire somebody who's prepared to be on conversations. That's my guess. But and there's a lot of cool things to like in this thing. That's what I would say. It does look like it trended up, you know, when the TV shows trended up, and it's kind of trending down a little bit. Do you want to go any further on this one, John, or are you just like, hell yes, I'm in?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be in. I think... yeah, like I say, there'd still be some questions there. It's going to be more of a, like on the bigger end of those products, it's obviously more of a B2B type thing. So I think there is potential that it would start a bit slower. Sometimes B2B niches do start a bit slower because you've got to, you know, get, you know, the
respect.
Customer journeys can be longer. It's more relationship based. And so, you know, you kind of have to get yourself out there a bit more sometimes before a regular stream of orders comes through, as compared to a primarily B2C market, where that's less of the case often. But once again, I mean, that's not a barrier. It's more just something to be aware of. Or, you know, maybe, I mean, it would just take off. That's possible too, straight away. So, but yeah, I love seeing the 1990s websites, and you know, that's a good sign. Don't have to sell many $30,000 rock crushers to make money, right? You sell three or four a month, you're a happy man.
So I got a question related to that. I have part of my background's in the marketplaces, you know, Walmart and Amazon and other marketplaces where you know exactly how well your competitors are doing. I mean, like down to the decimal point. And one of the kind of interesting things about being in the Shopify world now is it's hard to know who is a successful competitor just by looking at their site. I mean, what are the strategies that you use to kind of get some intelligence on, you know, how well someone might be doing?
I mean, I have some ideas. I'm curious if John has any. First, I'll say the first thing. Look, I'm pretty sure Facebook got sued for this. I think Shopify did too. If you had a rep at Shopify, they can see every single store. And there was a lot of people with loose lips for a while there. And I'm pretty sure there was a lawsuit over that. And so you could get the data you needed in the wrong ways if you wanted to. Look, there's better ways than that. There are, I don't need to get to the right window to tell you the name of it because I already forgot. Give me a second here. You can use a tool like SimilarWeb to actually gauge traffic that's happening to a white. Now, again, nothing's perfect, but if you can look at SimilarWeb and see, you know, you're going to go find, let's say you find 10 other sites that look awfully familiar. They look like they took a course like ours. You can use SimilarWeb to see that they're not getting any traffic. They're not running any ads. That's a really good sign. If you see them not running any ads, probably a really good sign that they're either just starting and they've never done anything. You can then Google best-selling Shopify extension. Some people disable this if they're really super worried. And it's simply like go to /collection/all and then add the best-selling Shopify extension. It will literally sort your store by your best-selling products. Now, if they've got like the number one, the number two product, and they've got one review on each of those, they probably haven't been around that long, right? And so like I don't try to gauge like is there interest in the market. If people are running ads, and you can go see cost per click and keyword planner, you can see competition, things like that. If people are running ads, if there's people ranking in SEO, there's money to be made there, right? And so like to John's point, I think people underestimate the size of markets in the US specifically. Is just like even these tiny little niche markets are absolutely enormous. And we're not trying to take 100% of any market. So, again, if people are spending money on ads, CPCs are high on the money keywords, that's a really good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, usually that's the case. The exception I would say is that, and I have seen this in a lot of kind of older school markets, right, which are not, you know, which are kind of populated with the sort of websites that we were just looking at. And they tend to be in the B2B side of things, right? Like these weird kind of things that nobody thinks about. Is that often they're not running ads simply because they've had websites up since the 1990s and they just rank organically. And they don't even bother running ads because they're highly profitable just getting organic traffic. You can see that. So sometimes not running ads is not necessarily a problem, but I agree. I think it's easier to measure a site's traffic than it is to measure a site's sales. But once again, I really hate it when people go like, I agree on Shopify. I don't think you can get accurate data on anybody at this point in time. I don't think you ever, I think that's, it's just a nonsense. It's the same argument as comparing yourself to other people, right? If I'm in that niche, about at least 50% of my orders are draft orders, right? For sure, I'm doing a ton of draft orders because you're going to have big quotes for like $100,000 plus. You're going to be giving them out on draft orders because you're going to do special pricing. You're not going to run it through your regular checkout. The draft orders object in Shopify is not part of the regular checkout system. So anything you sell as a draft order does not show as a bestseller automatically. And it can't be pulled out data-wise, right, by anybody. Yes, somebody who works at Shopify could leak it, but like that's not happening right now. Honestly, it's not. And so people who are like, oh, I know this store, how much they're doing, because I looked at their / bestsellers and blah, 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 doesn't fucking mean anything. Like, it's a false assumption. You're not looking at anything that you can see. You cannot see what's happening inside a business. You never can, right? You don't know how many there's. Like, I sell stuff via invoice, like that I just create in an invoice creator and they pay me into a bank account. Like, that's never going to show up anywhere. Even Amazon doesn't know that I'm doing that. I don't give a fuck what they think they know, right? So like it's, I don't care. I do not even think about that. Like, I'll be honest, when I'm going into an H, I don't think about it. I might do a little bit of research into sites, like Ben says, around traffic and that sort of thing. But there's a market for it. People buy these products, right? People use these products. So they're buying it somewhere. So I just have a bit more of an open mind about it. Like, I know what I can do. I've done it before. So there's no reason I'm not going to do it somewhere else. Like, it just doesn't even cross my radar what other sites are doing, to be honest. Like, you know, these days I really wouldn't care.
So I'm gonna kind of go to that same point, John. I'm selling a business right now, and I've been doing a lot of calls with buyers, and they all keep bringing this competition shit up. And like, that is my opinion too, of like, I don't care. Like, no one is talking to the same customer I am. The market, I'm selling dog supplements. That market is enormous. What are the odds I'm talking to the same fucking dog owner as like this random competitor they found? Like, I don't care one about the competition, because they literally don't affect you. If there's 10 other people selling this product, like, you can beat them in so many ways that you're not even thinking of. Like, if you're just focusing on Google Ads, then I might care about that. And again, I'm not calling you out, Victor. I'm just like calling out this entire idea of competition is like, I don't fucking care. Because, like, there's so many ways to win that, like, it doesn't – I don't know. Anyway, I could go on a huge rant there. But, Victor, like, why do you – when you're saying you're doing are you asking that from a research question? Or, like, why are you asking about, like
– More like a curiosity thing. Like I said, coming from, you know, an environment where you really, you know exactly where you are in relation to your competitors, to not really knowing. I mean, and like you guys said, fundamentally probably not important. I'm just curious.
Yeah, so I just used tool that Rob was using, by the way. So spyfood.com, I'll put it in the chat if you want to check it out. I just checked my own site. Numbers are accurate. I don't know how the fuck they're getting that information. I understand the organic. That's easy. That's just an API call. Some of the other numbers are creepy accurate on that. So, again, I don't know what you're using the data for, but there is ways to get a little bit of data, I guess. Go on, John. Sorry.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I think I thought about this stuff more in the beginning. And I think my mindset around this stuff, where I'm just running my own race, right? Like, I don't really care what other people do, because I know that any markets, I've never seen a niche where there's one or two sites that make all the sales. Like, that also is a false assumption. Like, just a lot of customers just don't buy from the same place for all sorts of tiny little reasons. So I think just through experience, I've just seen that knowing that stuff doesn't really make a difference, right? Or not knowing it doesn't make a difference. So I just don't care about it. I mean, that's one of my takeaways from maybe doing this for 10 years, is that it just doesn't matter. At least not at this level of business, with this type of business, maybe. Maybe it's different in other business categories and other types of e-commerce and that sort of thing. But for what we do, I just don't think it's relevant, because the reality is, in sort of niche e-commerce spaces, most sites are not doing a good job in the first place. They're just like, very rarely do I go into niche research and look at all the competition and go, oh my God, holy shit, I can't see a single way that I could do a better job than them. Like, that's such a rare thing, right? I mean, once again, when you're just a beginner and you look at your niche, you might not think that way, but your thinking around that stuff is going to change the longer you do it for. And you're going to start to realize that the people who you thought were doing really well in the beginning, they've really got so many holes in what they're doing that you can do, exploit or do differently or do better. It's just, you think you can't in the beginning because you don't know enough yet, right? You're not an expert in the marketing or the service space unless you've been doing it somewhere else before. You might be, but and so I think with time you start to think about this stuff a bit differently, and you just focus on your own race. Now, I'm not saying that you don't think about your competition. Like, yes, you need to be aware of how they're pricing their products, and yes, you need to be aware of what their offers are and all of that sort of thing. Yeah, so you still do that, but like, thinking about how well they are or aren't doing, I think, you know, is just not a helpful practice, because there's too much you can't know. And so focus on what you can do and what you can control, and let that consume your thinking, which is what you're doing. That's the only thing you ever have any control over. And you're going to do better, and you're going to be happier at the end of the day. And I think also, I purposefully try and keep the amount of data that I consider when I'm making decisions limited to what I know I need to consider and nothing else. Like, you can pull a lot of data in when you go into like niche selection and stuff like that to try and help you work out which is the right option. And you're in, if you do that, you're going to overload yourself with data. And I see people do this all the time. They're considering niches for like 3 fucking months and they haven't done anything because they're like, oh, I can't decide. I've got all this information and I keep second guessing and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah. And if I was you, I would have already picked one and I'd already be making sales and it wouldn't matter. Right. So that's another thing I would comment as well on this whole process is that some people look at the market selection criteria in our course and think that's not enough. It is what it is for a reason. I know it's enough because I've done it 1,000 times, right? Literally, like with other people, 1,000 times. There's more than 1,000 people in our course, and pretty much all of them have talked to me about niches in one way or another. So, aside from doing it for myself, so more data doesn't necessarily equal better decisions in this case, or timely decisions. Maybe is a better way to put it.
Well, that was fun. I kind of want to do that again sometime. So if you guys enjoyed that, please go comment in the thread in announcements. Happy to do more of that stuff. I get excited stumbling into these industries. So Matt, thank you for sharing the one that has me giddy. Matt messaged me right away and he's like, Lady in the Red Dress, huh? So if you guys are like Alex Hormozy fans, he talks about the Lady in the Red Dress distracting you from your main thing. Yeah, I would say that's pretty distracting, Matt. That looks so intriguing to me. I'm with Matt. Somebody doing that, let me know.
Yeah, let me know.
Oh, there was a comment in there too. Somebody said, let me get back up here. Paula Gerber said, I worked for a gold mining company for the past 2 years. Purchasing department is constantly trying to find last minute products to solve big problems. So in my humble opinion, it could be an interesting B2B niche once the industry, which is largely based on referrals, gets to know you. There's a lot of shiny objects out there. This one, gold is the shiniest object. Gold. Sorry, I was doing my best impression there.
Gold mine.
Goldfinger, whatever it was. I don't remember that movie anymore. I got some stories around that movie, actually. All right, so thank you all for being here. I appreciate it. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that our live event is happening this summer in July in Salt Lake City. Early bird tickets are on sale now. We've already sold a handful of those. We've already sold a handful of VIP seats as well, which is really cool. That's about half full. That is invite only. dropshipbreakthrough.com/live if you want to check out what we're doing this summer in Salt Lake City. We'd love to meet all of you in person. Come hang out. Doesn't matter whether you're a beginner, whether you're seasoned. I promise, like, getting around your own people is what the real value is. You'll probably learn something from the talks too, but honestly, just like seeing Victor in person, seeing Bill in person, seeing Luan in person, whoever else is there, shaking their hand, giving them a hug, getting to know somebody who's doing the same shit as you, that's what really matters. So we'd love to have you in Salt Lake City. Early bird tickets, I believe there's 19 left or 18 left. When they're gone, price is going up. So if you want to get in at the cheapest price you're going to see on those tickets, now would be the time. We'd love to have you. dropshipbreakthrough.com/live. Ruben, you got something to say? I saw you go off mute there.
No, I want to say thanks, but I was too early.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thanks for having us. Thanks for the ideas. Hopefully we didn't hurt anyone's feelings in the process. And if you like this, please, again, comment in the announcement channel. I would love to talk about it. We will see all of you 2 weeks on another call like this.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business.
John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business, not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts, to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for The Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out The Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.